Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Michael Collins with Journey to Success Radio. And today I'm honored to interview Juliana Maceo, a medical nutritionist. And we're going to talk about GMOs. We're going to talk about type 1 and type 2 diabetes, different foods, different things that you can look for, and demystifying some of the myths that doctors tell you in words that they use from a nutritional point of view. Good evening, Juliana. How are you today?
I'm great, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, thanks. It's nice to be on again.
Yeah, so let's get right into it because we have a lot to cover today. And I know the first thing that you wanted to talk about was GMOs, which is genetically modified organisms. And why don't you talk a little bit to the listeners about that?
Okay, well, for some people that may not know what that is, genetically modified organisms are basically, they're not even real foods, but what's happening is that scientists are genetically modifying seeds and other organisms like a tomato or a fish, and they're mixing them with other foods. So they're sort of creating frankenfoods, and they don't want us to know about this, especially the seeds. Most of these are made by the biotech companies, like primarily Monsanto, who also makes most of the pesticides like Roundup. So the more of these GE, genetically engineered seeds that are out there, the more of this Roundup that Monsanto sells, because that's the only thing that will kill the bugs and everything else that happens, that occur on these plants and these crops. So these things are very dangerous. They've been banned in most of the world, especially Europe, but they're not banned here for some strange reason. Obviously, money is always the bottom line. What's happening with the latest thing, actually, let me back up in terms of what happened last year in I think it was November. Anyway, California, there was something called Proposition 37, which was a mandatory labeling to label genetically engineered foods. Anyway, the big corporations, Monsanto and some of the other manufacturers, they donated millions, if not billions, of money to defeat this proposition. And basically would have given the state of California the right to know if a food had genetically modified food organisms in there. So unfortunately, this was defeated. But however, there are a lot of people in the movement, and we're still going, we're still fighting, because most people, I think the latest stats were that 90% of people, whether they're in the health field or not, or whether they care about what they're eating or not, that's irrelevant at this point. It's that about 90% of Americans do want to know whether there's genetically modified food organisms in their food. So obviously people still want to know. So what's happening now is that in November there's going to be something called I-522, and that's going to be another initiative that's going to happen in the state of Washington. And basically, if anyone wants to contact me, I have a lot of information on petitions to sign, the main organizations that are working on these GMOs and how to defeat them, because Monsanto and their friends, I mean, they have lots and lots of money. So they're just pumping money into this. But we need to, you know, work at the grassroots levels and just defeat this nonsense, because otherwise we're just going to be constantly eating more and more genetically engineered food. And it's just about everywhere. I mean, anyone that eats corn or soy or canola, any of those foods, they're all genetically engineered foods, and they're very, very unhealthy. Did you want to jump
right
in, Michael?
Now, yeah, now I wanted to say that with genetically modified foods, a lot of it is, from what I've read, is very unstable. Do you want to speak a little bit about that?
Well, it's unstable because they're mixing and splicing genes from one organism to another. So this is playing God with the food supply. So, of course, it's going to be unstable because we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I think one of the latest things that they did there was fish DNA in a tomato. That's not a good thing. Now, people that have certain food allergies, let's say they're allergic to fish, and they're eating a tomato, and there's a, you know, there's fish DNA in there. That person could potentially get sick or have a severe allergic reaction. And it might not be traced back to the tomato because, you know, maybe they think they're just allergic to food. You can't trace that back. So that's where the instability comes in, because we don't know what's going to happen down the road. Although there's been a lot of studies about what these things are causing in the animal models, obviously they haven't been around that long for us to test in humans, but these things are nothing but bad news. So, yes, they're very unstable.
Let me ask you this, because you said they've been tested in animals.
Mm-hmm.
So in the animal models, what type of diseases? And also, even though they've not been tested in humans, humans have been eating genetically modified organisms, I guess, what, for the last 5-6 years now?
It might be a little more than that, but it hasn't
okay.
been, you know, it hasn't been like a generation. But in terms of animals, I mean, they're looking at infertility, birth defects, organ damage, cancer, reduced lifespan. I mean, this is nothing to take lightly. You know, it's not a broken nail. These are severe things.
In your opinion, would you say this is the reason that we are coming up with so many new diseases in this day and age now?
Well, I would say it certainly is helping. Again, I'm not sure. I don't have the exact data on how long this has been going on, but we have there's a variety of reasons why there are so many illnesses and health issues that were not around a long time ago. Like cancer is huge, heart disease, diabetes, neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. These were not really common years ago, but now that they're epidemics. And I'm sure this is contributing to it, because, again, there's the pesticides that Monsanto and their friends use, especially Roundup. These things are toxic. It's not just one pesticide. We're talking about hundreds, if not thousands, and they all interact with each other. So the burden, the body, can, you know, maybe the body can handle my 5, 10, 15, I don't know, maybe even 20 can take care of it through the detox mechanisms of the liver. But we're talking about hundreds, if not thousands. And we're just talking about chemicals, you know, pesticides, herbicides, insecticides, fungicides. Then we need to add the food additives, the food coloring, the artificial sweeteners, the fake fats. There are so many variables that are all interlinked, and they're all leading to poor health.
Right. Now, is there anything that the average family can do to help break down the genetically modified foods? Is there certain ways that they can clean their foods, certain things that they can do other than just not buy them?
No, there isn't any way to get rid of it, because it's in the DNA, so you really can't wash it off like a pesticide or, you know, some foods you can wash some of that stuff off, especially with some of those natural cleansers. But when we're talking about genetic modified foods, you can't wash these off. This is in the DNA. It's like you got to, like, wash in the tomato. It's not going away. I mean, basically, if the way to cut down on this as best as possible is to stop eating all the junk food. And that's, you know, that's easier said than done, because trying to avoid corn and soy and canola, there was another one in there, cottonseed is pretty huge, because they're found in all processed foods. All of
right.
99% of all the corn and the soy grown in the United States is genetically modified.
Right. And, you know, I've seen different documentaries where, you know, a farmer may be growing organic corn, and
mm-hmm.
the field next to him is using genetically modified corn. And when the wind blows, it actually blows the...
into the organic farm.
Right.
Yes. I mean, it's a well-known fact that that does happen. And we really have no way of knowing. I think it's really a Pandora's box that was opened, and I don't know that it will ever be closed again.
Right.
So So even the foods that are labeled natural and even organic, and they might not be. They could still technically have genetically engineered organisms in their GMOs for short.
Right, just from the wind blowing.
Just from the wind blowing. It's like pollination. You know, if the wind blows, things are going to get pollinated, flowers and all that other stuff. So just from that. So it's, like I said, it's a Pandora's box, and I don't know that it will ever be closed again. But the more farmers plant these seeds and use these seeds, the more we're going to have of this stuff. I mean, the tragedy here is that Monsanto has patents on these seeds, and they have all these rules and regulations that farmers can only use their seeds, which is insane. So farmers can actually go to jail for using their own seeds and storing their own seeds because Monsanto has all these property rights. And a lot of farmers have gotten into trouble, so to say, with the law and Monsanto because they're so powerful. They have so much money and so many lobbyists. Actually, there was something else that happened, and I think it was Vermont, where they actually passed another initiative so people want to know about GMO foods. And Monsanto, I forget how long ago this was, but it was recent. They want to sue the state of Vermont. They actually got two of the politicians that voted for the right to know. They got to them that they're going to sue Vermont unless they, you know, change their vote. So this is how powerful they are. I mean, they pretty much control the government.
Right.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that they're controlling what we put in our bodies,
right,
and they are creating these unhealthy strands of food,
mm-hmm,
that are basically causing known and unknown diseases.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, Juliana, let me ask you about the labeling system, because I know some of the labeling systems with food starts with a 9 or an 8. These codes have a meaning. Can you explain that to the listeners?
Right. And, you know, I forgot my form. Yes, because there is one. I'm not going to guess, but I think the 9 is organic. I don't have my form in front of me. I actually had that information, but if people want to go to, you know, email me, I can certainly send it out to them. But one of them is conventional, one of them is genetically modified organism, and one of them is organic. But, again, I forget which ones. I don't have it in my notes. Sorry
right.
about that. But I can certainly get that out to you.
But this is information that everybody should look for when they're buying vegetables, because
right.
they'll know what type of...
Yeah, there's that little sticker that they put on all the vegetables, and it's going to start with a 9 or I think a 3 or a 4, and that's the way to tell whether it is or it is not a GMO food or GMO product.
Would you say that most restaurants are using GMO products?
Oh, I would say. Yeah, I mean, they obviously have to cut costs and just give people food, large quantities of food, regardless of the quality. So I would say most of them are, unless we're talking about some really fine restaurants that are using really fresh organic foods. Other than that, your average restaurant is certainly using GMO foods.
Right. And is this true that Monsanto has even cracked down on individuals who have their own farms in their yard?
Absolutely.
For not using their seeds? And
yes, Monsanto will crack down on everyone. I think what a lot of people don't know is that they're just a multinational corporation, and they're actually so many, this is really tragic, so many farmers in India that daily, I'm talking about daily, commit suicide because they can't grow their own, they can't use their own seeds, they can't grow their crops, they can't feed their families. This is tragic. So, yes, it is true. So they're worldwide, and they're threatening everyone, and people are losing their lives and their livelihoods, and, yes, they're even actually after people that want to grow their own vegetable gardens. I mean, it's pretty much what it's come down to, that at some point we might not be able to grow our own vegetables or raise our own livestock. I mean, this is pretty much the direction it's going in, if Monsanto has their way, and the USDA and the FDA, which are, you know, they pretty much work for Monsanto and the big industries. If they have their way, that will happen. So there goes my little garden in the background with all my green vegetables.
Right. I know it's a little known fact, but it is a fact that Clarence Thomas, who is now on the Supreme Court, used to be the head counsel for Monsanto. So
yeah.
if there's ever a conflict of interest,
there it is.
There it is.
Well, these are just revolving doors. I'm sorry. These are just revolving doors. Like, you know, the FDA. Most people that work at the FDA used to be in pharmaceuticals. So they go from FDA, pharmaceutical to FDA and back to pharmaceutical and back to FDA. The same thing with all these other corporations. They're going into politics. They're going in the industry. Then they work for the government, for these regulatory agencies. So they get to make all the rules and the regulations. And the hell with everybody else.
Right.
Yeah.
Yet by the same token, I'm sure they're finding ways not to eat this food.
Yeah, well, like I said, the movement is not going away. You know, as you know, Michael, you and I, we're activists, so we're not going anywhere. But so it's growing. We just have to stick after them. Now, I do have a list. I have a list of brands, because most of us that are listening, I know you and I are, you know, in the so-called health natural movement, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm going to name some of these companies here. There are a bunch of companies whose parent companies donated millions to defeat Proposition 37. Now, I have this list, which I can mail out to people, and we're just asking people to call these companies and tell them that we're going to boycott their products until they stop donating money to defeat the right to know. And I'm going to name some of these things.
Okay, and what you can do also is we'll name some right now, but also put this, I'm sure it's up on your website, right?
It's not on my website yet, because this is all the new stuff that I've been working on, and my webmaster has got to get it on. But if anyone is interested, they just have to email me, and I'll get out all the information that I have about the latest things going on.
And, Juliana, why don't you give everybody your email right now? We'll give it to them a couple of times during this broadcast, but why don't you give it to them right now?
Yes, so my email is info@nymedicalnutrition.com. That's info@nymedicalnutrition.com. So that's my email. Anyone's interested in any of this, the GMO information, because I have a list of the Organic Consumers Association and all the steps that they can take to, you know, call their senators or sign petitions or call these companies or just boycott, this will be available. I could certainly send it out to people.
Well, I think one of the best ways is to boycott because, number one, you won't be taking in these types of foods. And number two, if you hit them in their pocketbook where it really hurts, maybe they'll change their consciousness and change their whole way of looking at the food industry and what they're giving to the public.
Well, that's the thing that's going to, like, you know, hitting them in the pocketbook is the only way that they're going to take notice. You know, us going on, you know, it's wonderful going on the street with the signs, et cetera. But unless, you know, they feel it in their bottom line, which is their bank accounts, not much is going to happen.
Okay.
You know, so by us boycotting them, we're just sending a strong message.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So why don't you name a few of the companies that you'd like to let people know are doing this?
Okay. Well, I'm going to name a few here, like Dagoba. I know people think that's a good chocolate, but it's made by Hershey, which is the parent company. So, again, this is just a list. This is like a partial list. The list is long. But anyway, we have a number here to call them and, again, tell them what we want. Silk Foods, which is made by Dean Foods. Now, you know, I'm not a fan of soy, and we can get into that at some point, but so many people are into soy, and what is Dean Foods doing? Donating, I don't know, you know, thousands of dollars to defeat Proposition 37 and probably to defeat the next proposition that's going to be taking place in Washington in November. Let's see, what else did I have that people will know here? Cascadian Farm. Now, most people think, oh, that's, you know, a pretty healthy company. Well, they're owned by General Mills, Ben & Jerry's, you know. That's owned by Unilever, Kashi. I mean, I don't promote cereal, but a lot of my patients think, oh, I eat Kashi because it's so great. Well, that's made by Kellogg's. That's the parent company. Larabar, you know, most people would think that's such a great bar. That's made by General Mills. So these are the parent companies, and they just, like I said, they've donated millions and millions to defeat these propositions. So, again,
so So it sounds like the parent companies are the traditional companies that basically own a lot of different food brands.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're protecting these food brands.
Right.
And even though they claim to produce alternative brands, they're producing brands that are not healthy and that are that cause harm and are using these GMOs. And I know you talked about soy a little bit. Compare soy with almond milk as opposed to, you know, to the two, because I know people think that soy milk is healthy, but a lot of soy is GMO.
Right. Well, there's no comparison. Soy is a GMO food. It's not even fit for consumption. Basically, besides it being genetically modified food, it has estrogenic properties. So feeding soy milk to babies is like giving them 5 birth control pills. That's number one. Soy also contains a lot of phytates, P-H-Y-T-A-T-S, and these actually bind minerals. So, you know, a lot of people, especially women, will take in soy products thinking, oh, it's got the vitamin D and minerals for the bones. Well, that's not going to happen because the phytates actually bind all the minerals. In addition, it has something called goitrogen. And that actually binds thyroid hormones. It actually causes thyroid dysregulation. So there's so many things wrong with soy. It is not a food. It is a non-food. It's actually very toxic. And, of course, you know, the American market has this belief, or that's what they promote, that Asians eat a lot of soy. Well, that's really not true. Asians eat condiments. They eat soy as a condiment, and it's also in its fermented state, like a tempeh or a miso. They eat a couple of tablespoons, maybe 3 or so per each meal. But they don't substitute soy milk for a glass of milk. I don't really think a lot of Asians drink milk anyway. But they're not doing that. That's just a myth. That's just a myth in this country because they grow so much soy in this country that they have to get rid of it somehow. So, of course, they've done all these studies. Now, all these studies that promote soy and how wonderful it is, et cetera, they're all funded by the soybean industry, which is pretty huge. I mean, all the university studies that they've done, they're all funded by the soybean industry.
Right. So it's pretty hypocritical. It's like the person doing the funding and putting up the money is the person who wants a certain result to come out.
Right. And so I mean, like the pharmaceutical companies are the same way. Yeah. It's all, if it's industry funded, you can't trust it. You really can't, because they're just going to cherry pick their findings. That means, oh, this study showed a little bit good, but some bad. They cherry pick. This is what they do. So science is not the most, you know, it's not very ethical at this point in time, which is unfortunate.
I like to say that, unfortunately, you know, the medicine, pharmaceuticals, we're living in the barbarian state, and it's the same thing with food and what we're doing with the food. And it seems like money is the key, and money, you know, forget that we're all spiritual beings, and that to increase the spirit and to build the body,
right,
we're looking at, you know, these companies are looking at money and what their bottom line is and what they can really take from people, as opposed to giving people stuff that's going to produce more and more health.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I can't agree with you more. I mean, I don't know how they live with themselves. I don't know how they sleep at night, but that's their bottom line. it's not about us. It isn't about our health. It isn't about our quality of life. It's, you know, it's their bank account. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And the lawmakers that we have elected who keep this going, and when will we have somebody stand up to break this cycle?
I wish I knew.
I'm making a statement almost because we need people to stand up to break this cycle.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And I think, you know, I think some politicians go in there with, you know, with altruistic motives that they want to change things. But once they get there and they see the money and the lobbyists and they're filling their pockets, I think it's very easy to just turn a cheek and just do whatever happens there. Just do the norm, whatever happens in Washington.
Right.
So, I think until the funding, the lobbyist funding, ends, I don't know that things are going to change.
Right. Well,
yeah.
The lobbyist is a great detriment to this country.
Right, exactly. Because
they're against throwing money at Congress and throwing money at legislators from the local all the way up to the national. And instead of people doing what's right for people, they're using these studies to justify and modify and to take these positions that really, really are hurtful to people in the long run and really go against the natural instincts of nature and the planet.
Right.
This is Michael Collins with Journey to Success Radio. And this evening, I'm talking with Juliana Maceo, who is a New York State medical nutritionist. And what I want to do is I want to open up the lines. If anybody has questions about anything that we've said, you can call in to 718-766-4453. That's 718-766-4453. I'm sure Juliana would be glad to answer any of your questions. We've talked about genetically modified organisms, and we talked about how we really need to have a crusade to get rid of them. And I know, Juliana, you also wanted to talk about diabetes type 1 and type 2 and debunk some of the myths that go along with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we open that up right now?
Sure.
You want to explain to people what diabetes is exactly?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Diabetes is a blood sugar disorder. And basically there are two types of diabetes. There's type 1, which generally happens in infants and children. And that happens when the beta cells are damaged, so the pancreas cannot produce insulin. So generally with this type of diabetes, the child will grow up into an adult, and they will need to use insulin, which is a hormone. And most of them will either inject it, or now they have pumps, which they need to take in as they eat their meals. So that's type 1. It's not the most common. Now, the one that's common mostly is called type 2 diabetes. And years ago, before the food pyramid came in, this used to be called adult onset diabetes. Well, the tragedy now is that it is no longer adult onset, because we're seeing these in children, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And this basically happens because of the types of food that the food pyramid encouraged people to eat. Now, that was the perfect pyramid to create this epidemic of diabetes. So basically, it's caused by excess carbohydrate intake, and carbohydrates all turn to sugar. So the body has to clear the sugar by making insulin. And basically, over time, what happens is the pancreas just wears out. So I wore my pancreas out diabetes. basically. That's what happens with it. So the way this is diagnosed is when someone goes to the doctor and it's a fasting blood test, and let's say the regular blood sugar readings are anywhere from 70 to 110. If it's anywhere over 126, it's considered diabetes. And, of course, the higher that number is, the worse it gets. Because what happens over time, if it is not controlled, is the blood sugar starts spilling over into the urine. And then we get glucose in the urine, which is not supposed to be there. We also get something called ketones, and that's not supposed to be in the urine. But overall, over time, if diabetes is not managed and the blood sugar goes way under control, because what happens with blood sugar, it damages proteins. So the thing that happens over time, especially in diabetics, is that the nerves get damaged and the capillaries get damaged, so there's a higher risk of heart disease, retinopathy, which is damage to the eyes, the retina, which causes blindness. And then there's kidney failure because the sugar actually damages the tubules of the kidneys. And then there's nerve damage. And again, if there's enough nerve damage, especially in the limbs and the feet, et cetera, a lot of them will end up with amputation. Now, this is very tragic because this is so avoidable. And this is what makes me crazy because I've worked in a hospital, and in the 2 years that I was there, there was a woman there. I have to talk about her. I think in the course of like 8 months, they amputated one leg, and 8 months later, they amputated another leg, the whole leg. Now, this, mind you, she's in the hospital. Why are they not controlling her blood sugar? This is crazy. It just makes me insane because in a hospital setting, they should have been able to control that. But you know what? They didn't, because you know what they feed them in hospitals? They feed them the actual diets that promote diabetes. And these diets diets are promoted by the Dietetic Association and the Diabetes Association. And I do want people to know that I'm not a dietitian and I'm not a member of the organization and I don't get funded by anyone. However, the Diabetes Association, the Dietetic Association, they are all funded by the food industry and the pharmaceutical companies. So they're not going to, you know, bite the hand that feeds them. So the foods that they promote are the exact foods that cause the blood sugar imbalances, like the cereals and the orange juice and the mashed potatoes and the pound cake. This is what they're feeding diabetics. I've seen that. You know, this is what they were feeding them. I mean, shame on them. How is somebody supposed to get better? This is why that woman got both of her legs amputated. I mean,
do you
want to
go back and just tell people what carbohydrates are dangerous and that they should look out for?
Yes, of course. Well, in excess, any carb is dangerous because all carbohydrates, whether it's a grain, a whole grain, or a processed bleach, et cetera, the final conversion is all sugar. However, I'm not saying we shouldn't be eating any carbs. But, again, going back to the food pyramid, I'm sure everybody's seen one of those little things. At the bottom where it's the largest those are all carbohydrates, and they're encouraging people to eat 6 to 11 servings of carbohydrates a day, which turns out to be maybe, again, depending on the portions, it could be 200 grams of carbohydrates a day, which is insane. So basically we're looking at cereals. You know, people say cereals or Cheerios are the breakfast of champion. Well, it's really the breakfast of diabetics. So we're talking about cereals, muffins, rice, bread, pasta, any sweets, candies, cakes, anything made of flour, fruit juices, soda, of course. And if it's diet, that's another issue. But the consumption of carbohydrates is just out of control because, this is what they've been promoting, and they're still promoting this in hospitals. So people need to watch their carbohydrate intake because, you know, people say, oh, like I get patients, and they'll say, oh, diabetes runs my family. And they think, and the industry wants you to believe that because that way then you have no control over this. Then you just are at the mercy of the medical establishment. But that is so not true because diabetes is preventable. And that's the tragedy when it doesn't, when people still are developing diabetes, where when dialysis centers are popping out all over the place. You know, this is an epidemic. They shouldn't be popping out all over the place, but this is because they keep promoting the same diet. and, you know, the people don't get well. They're on their drugs and they're on insulin, and the insulin stops working. Then they kind of get all kinds of organ and damaged tissue. Then the next thing you know, they're on dialysis. So it's
right.
Just real tragic that it's, you know, people think that it's not preventable. Like I said, they think it's in their families. But that maybe 5 or 10% of genetics play out in the kind of diseases we develop. Most of it is diet. Diet is huge. Lifestyle factors and some other factors. But most of it is diet and lifestyle. You know, they tell you that if it's genetic, then you're going to need a drug for it. You know, there's nothing you could do about it. Diet doesn't make any sense. I mean, diet has nothing to do with it. And doctors still say that to patients, so your diet has nothing to do with it, about anything, I mean, about any diseases.
Right, but I would take it that with hereditary, people in the same families usually eat the same thing.
Exactly.
And that's why people come up with this, with similar type diseases that other family members have.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. Right. Yeah, so of course, you know, you're eating like, you know, your parents or your grandparents and they had that. Well, what do you think is going to happen? And it's going to be worse now because the food now is even more processed than, you know, when your parents were eating and your great and your grandparents, they probably had healthier foods than we do now. So, of course, they ate the same thing, you eat the same thing, you're going to develop pretty much the same thing. You know, that cell is going to replicate and do the same thing. That DNA is just going to replicate and produce the same kind of symptoms or issues or diseases.
Right, and the soil has been more diluted. And as we talked about earlier, now we have to deal with the GMOs.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
those two things help, again, to weaken the immune system.
Right. Well, the topsoil has been dead for probably decades now, from what I remember of my studies. I mean, it's been decades. There are hardly any minerals in the topsoil. So the only place to get actual minerals is basically eating organic. Because the topsoil of conventional and conventionally grown products, there's very little minerals. And minerals are just so important for health.
Right. What would you say a diabetic should be eating?
Well, a diabetic, basically it's more of a protein fat diet with definitely lots of vegetables, very limited carbohydrates. I mean, it depends on what their blood sugar is. If it's manageable, I will. I usually give them a certain number of grams of carbohydrates to eat. If it's out of control, they're not going to get any carbohydrates until I get that under control. But there are certain foods, especially protein. So let's take a look at the three macronutrients. So we have carbohydrates, proteins, fats. Carbohydrates all turn to sugar, regardless. Proteins do not turn to sugar unless we're eating excessive quantities. Then it will convert to sugar. Now, fats never turn to sugar. And we're going to talk about, you know, the good fats that we're looking for. So in other words, they're very insulin-friendly and they're anti-diabetic. Same thing with protein, again, unless we're eating excessive amounts. Whereas carbohydrates are pro-diabetic and they're anti-insulin. They're not insulin-friendly. So, no, yeah, we can't go wrong with eating plenty of vegetables. The protein, and again, it has to be quality, clean protein as best as you can. I'm not advocating eating cold cuts or anything like that. It's always best to find natural sources or healthier sources or versions of protein. And I'm not talking about fast food or anything like that. Limited amount of fruit, because even though fruit is good, but fruit is still a carbohydrate, still converts to sugar. Same thing with fruit juices. They should not be in a diabetic's eating plan. Again, depending where the blood sugar is. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, legumes work well if the blood sugar is controlled, but legumes are half starch, half protein. And if they're balanced out, they're going to be fine. And fats are very, very important for balancing out blood sugar. Now, as you know, the typical American diet is the typical breakfast, even for diabetics. What are they recommending? Cereal, skim milk, toast with toxic margarine and orange juice. Now, you might as well just take a bowl of sugar and eat that because it's the same thing as that breakfast. That is the worst way to start the day. Like I said, that's the breakfast of diabetes. That's how to get diabetes. You start off with a breakfast like that, or a muffin or a donut or, orange juice. That's the perfect way to start off your day and have blood sugar spikes all day long. But fats are very, very important because they stabilize blood sugar. So I have people add plenty of good fats in their diet, like avocado, olive oil. Coconut oil is a huge plus. Butter from grass-fed animals. Palm oil. Some of the better oils. Sesame oil. Those are some of the better fats. And, of course, animal fats are very important. I know some people will disagree with me, but animal fats are actually very important because the heart, the primary fuel for the heart is actually a saturated fat known as stearic acid, which actually comes from beef. So there's a lot of fallacies out there about saturated fat. Saturated fat does not cause heart disease. Now, that's another one of those myths that the vegetable oil industry want us to believe, because what happened many moons ago is the vegetable oil industry, the ones that make the corn and the safflower, sunflower, canola, soybean oil. Again, what is their bottom line? It's money. So they pretty much made up this whole thing about saturated fat being the evil one, being so nefarious that it causes heart disease, etc. Well, the truth is that most of the heart disease research, especially when they were looking at vessels, most of the damage was done by vegetable oils. Because vegetable oils are highly inflammatory. They actually promote tumors and among other things. So these are, again, corn, the safflower, safflower, soybean oil. These are very toxic because they're very highly unsaturated oils and they break down and they into really toxic compounds. And then they create a lot of free radicals because they're not stable. So getting those fats in is very, very important. And this becomes even more important when someone is on a renal diet, which is even more severe than a regular diabetic diet. Because generally when someone has renal disease, the protein intake has to be, we usually measure that out. We're usually given a certain formula to do that. But because the byproduct of protein can also be toxic for diabetics, especially when they're in that renal stage, so the protein gets reduced as well as the carbohydrates. So the main macronutrient that's going to be filling up the gap of the diet of a renal patient are fats, believe it or not. So they need to eat more fats and a limited amount of protein and probably a very limited amount of carbohydrate at that stage.
Right. So what you're saying is that beef, avocados would be good for people.
Yes, absolutely. Avocado, coconut oil, I can't stress coconut oil enough. Again, all the other good oils like olive oil and sesame oil is wonderful. But coconut oil is wonderful. It's got antiviral, antibacterial, antimicrobial properties. It actually does not promote weight gain. It's actually used in hospitals on those feeding formulas, those feeding tubes. It actually promotes energy. Those are known as medium chain triglycerides. So they're not stored as fat. It's used as energy, but there are so many health benefits to coconut oil. It's great for the thyroid. It's just great for so many things. It's great for the gut, and I can't stress it enough. I just want to put everybody on coconut oil. And again,
how do you use it? Do you mix it in a salad? Do you
you wouldn't mix that. I personally put it in my espresso, or I'll take it right off the spoon. Now, I can cook with it. People can cook with it. A lot of people, some of my patients, they didn't know how to, they want a suggestion. When they're getting used to it, they'll put it maybe in their tea or their coffee, so they're not putting in the milk or any of those toxic sugars in there. Cooking with it is wonderful, or if you can take it right off the spoon, however you can get it in. And again, I tell people to start slowly, because initially people have a hard time digesting fats. So start off with a teaspoon, and then, just add more and more as you could tolerate it. And also coconut oil is, there's been a lot of research on coconut oil in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, where it's actually pretty much stabilized the progression of the disease. So there's a lot of promise with coconut oil, but of course the industry will poo-poo it and say it's, you know, old wives' tale, and they don't want, you know, they're still demonizing coconut oil, just like they're demonizing saturated fats, which coconut oil is a saturated fat. So it's
how
still
much,
being...
How much coconut oil should a person work themselves up to?
I would say a good 2-3 tablespoons. It depends on the condition. I mean, individuals with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, they're taking anywhere from 1 to 2 tablespoons every 3 to 4 hours, because it doesn't last that long. The body utilizes really quickly. It'll use it as because the brain uses sugar. So because there's nerve damage with those kind of health issues, the coconut oil becomes the fuel for the brain. So it gets up used really quickly. So every few hours, every 3 or 4 hours, they're actually eating a tablespoon, 2 tablespoons. But again, those are severe neurodegenerative conditions. But you can't take too much of it. I mean, because you'll get sick. You won't feel good. So you'll know. But a good 1 to 3 tablespoons a day is very, very healthy. And I recommend that to, you know, most people, unless they have, because they have some kind of a nut allergy or a tree nut allergy, which I think coconut would fall under that. But other than that, it's very beneficial.
Right. I just want to stop for a moment. This is Michael Collins of Journey to Success Radio, and I'm speaking with Juliana Maceo, a New York State medical nutritionist. Thank you for sharing this valuable information. And just why don't we just stop for a minute, and Juliana, why don't you give people your number, your website, and your email, so if they want to get in contact with you, share this information, or if they have, you know, different medical issues that they would like to discuss, they can contact you.
Sure. My website is www.newyorkmedicalnutrition.com. And my phone number where I can reach is 516-593-5167. My email address is info@nymedicalnutrition.com. Yes. So that's my contact info. If anyone has any questions or concerns, that's the best way to reach me.
If anybody would like to call in, the number is 718-766-4453. So I just want to get back to the GMO for a second. A number of companies in Europe have GMO-free, so where they don't allow any GMO products.
Right. Well, most countries in the EU have banned GMO foods. They have what's called a GMO-free zone in Europe.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, but I think there was something happening a while ago also where, again, Monsanto was just... bullying. They're just bully tactics. They were just bullying the EU or not allowing their genetically modified frankenfoods into the EU, the European Union.
Right.
Yeah, but there is a zone called the zone-free, GMO zone-free. Yeah, I think it's zone-free, yeah.
Are there any studies of how GMOs affect diabetes and renal failure?
Not that I'm aware of. I have not looked into that research. But I can't, you know, I can't imagine that it wouldn't, because again, in the animal studies, it affected organs. So the kidneys are an organ. So I can't imagine that it wouldn't have an effect. I can't imagine it would be a positive effect. It would have to be definitely a negative effect.
Right.
Yeah, the thing that I want people to understand about diabetes is that it is preventable. And even, you know, even if you are diagnosed, like, you know, I have patients that'll be like, they'll come in and they'll say, oh, my doctor says I was borderline. Okay, you know what that means? That's like saying, you know, I'm a little pregnant. No, it's either you are or you're not. And that's nothing to be taking lightly. It really isn't. Because once you're diagnosed, you can reverse that. And that is not a death sentence. You just got to know what to do. You got to change your diet. Because those drugs they're going to put you on are just Band-Aids. Because most people will say, well, I'm going to eat whatever I want because I'll take my medications and control my blood sugar like that. Well, it doesn't happen like that because you will still get organ damage from the sugar. Because what happens is the glucose, the sugar, it glycates. It just damages proteins. This is what people are not understanding. It just damages protein, the protein of the eyes, the protein of the nerves, the protein of the kidneys, all the other proteins of the whole body. But those are the major organs that are just profoundly affect diabetics.
Right.
So it's not about controlling it with the pill. It's not. No, you got to do the right thing. You need to change your diet. You need to get some exercise. You need to find some kind of a de-stressing technique, whether it's meditation or massage or Tai Chi or whatever it is. Things need to change. You can't keep eating the same diet and expect that it's going to go away. I mean, the good news is it can. It is reversible. But the work has to be done.
Now,
and
how
need to be made.
How good are nuts for a source of protein?
Nuts are very good. However, nuts have to be sprouted because nuts also contain phytates. Again, we said this before, phytates, and phytates bind minerals. So nuts are great if they are sprouted, and the way I do nuts is like some people will sprout them, some people will soak them overnight. This is what I do. I soak them overnight in sea salt, and then the next day I put them in the oven at a very low temperature for many, many hours. And basically once they're not cooked at very high temperature, they're just slightly dehydrated, so all the phytates are neutralized, then they're a good source of protein. However, they're not a complete protein, but they are a good source of fat. They're mostly fat anyway, and there's some protein in there. But you wouldn't want to just eat nuts that are, first of all, if they're dry roasted or if they're roasted, that means all the oils in there are rancid because nuts have oils in there, and those oils are very fragile, and they get rancid. So eating rancid oils is not a good thing. So if we're eating them raw, then they contain the phytates. So that's not a good thing. So the best thing is to soak them or sprout them. That's the best way to eat nuts. And those are a good source, again, of some very good fats. They stabilize the blood sugar. Those would make a great snack because they're portable. You know, they don't need refrigeration or anything. So they do make a great snack if they're prepared properly.
Right. What should a diabetic's diet look like?
You want like a breakdown? Like a breakfast,
yeah.
Lunch, dinner? Okay.
Yeah, just an average, which would be healthy for a diabetic.
Mm-hmm. The best way to start the day are organic eggs. I mean, if you can get eggs from a farm that have been pasture, you know, raised from pasture chickens, that is the ideal. Because eggs contain vitamin A, which is so important and so crucial for diabetics, and vitamin D, choline, which is a B vitamin, very important for memory and learning, cognition, lecithin, which is very good for cholesterol, and an incredibly amount of nutrients. So if the blood sugar is balanced, I would say two nice eggs with a slice of some whole grain bread, maybe a sprout of bread with some natural butter. And I said butter, not margarine. Maybe a piece of fruit, again, depending on the blood sugar, maybe not. And then if they need a snack, I would say maybe a handful of nuts. Lunch, some kind of a clean protein, maybe some fish or some chicken with vegetables or a salad. An afternoon snack, that could, again, depending on the blood sugar. It might be a fruit, it might be nuts, it might be a piece of cheese, it might be some hummus with cut up vegetables. I know it's not the most exciting thing, but again, we're talking about, you know, we want to reverse this condition. And then dinner, some other type of protein, whether it's meat or chicken or turkey, you know, whatever their sources of protein are. And vegetables, always vegetables, salad. And again, depending on blood sugar, I usually will give some kind of a starch, whether it's a sweet potato or a small amount of brown rice or wild rice or quinoa or amaranth, any of those starches. But again, those are limited, and I generally keep the amount of carbohydrates at a certain amount. I actually will count out the grams for the patient. I won't have them count it out. But let's say their blood sugar is stable. I will give them maybe 60 to 80 grams of carbs a day, maybe. You know, if it's very severe, they might be at maybe 30 grams of carbs a day. So I don't have them count anything because it gets tedious and patients don't want to do that. But I'll give them a certain eating plan, and I'll say, you know, one or two carbs or three, and that's what they'll stick with. Then they'll be within that range of the amount of carbs that I want them to have for that particular time while their blood sugar is that within that range. And, of course, I'll recommend exercise and their supplements, and there's a lot of things that we could do to get that blood sugar under control and prevent it from causing damage.
Now, do you give cooking classes?
No, I do not give them cooking classes, but I'm sure there's some great people out there that give great cooking classes. That's not one of my fortes. I mean, I cook, but I don't do cooking classes.
Okay. And do you want to tell people about, because I know you just opened up a wellness center.
Yes.
Why don't you tell people a little bit about the Wellness Center and what you're offering at the Wellness Center?
Okay, great. Well, I'm obviously at the Wellness Center doing nutrition. I also do something called nutrition response testing, which is a technique that helps me find answers to what the problems are. And again, it's a hand-on analysis that I really can't get into because we don't have a lot of time. But the other thing that I do offer there are specific diets. And then my tenant also offers massage and acupuncture and facials and different types of aesthetic services. So I've been there a couple of years, but I just took it over this past year, and we made it our own little wellness center. And it's just a nice zen place to be. It's very the energy feels really good in there. It's a healing place. We just want people to come in and just re-energize and just put them on their path to health and help them
right.
with their goals. That's what our goal is, just get people healthy, you know, because the healthier we are, the healthier we stay, there'll be less people in hospital beds and less money for, you know, pharmaceutical companies and the medical industrial complex and these bad companies poisoning us with their foods.
Right.
So we
really
do a lot of education.
It really sounds like it's about empowering the patient.
Yes, because, you know, the mainstream does not want to empower people. They just want people to, you know, be at their mercy. This is all about empowering, that you can do this, you could change your diet, you can decrease your stress, you can start some exercising. It's all up to you. You can do it. And just empowering, that's the perfect word. Getting people
right.
to understand that they have the power to change.
Well, Juliana, we're coming down to our last minute. And number one, I want to thank you for sharing all this information with the listeners. I'm sure it's going to be helpful to a numerous amount of people.
Thank you.
And number two, in this last minute, is there anything that you'd like to say to people, anything you'd like to tell them, any upcoming events that you're doing?
Well, what I really want, again, I just want to tell people that they have the power to change their health. Their health is in their hands. I mean, it's just very important for people to understand that. I mean, that's really how I'm going to leave them at. I don't have anything coming up. We will be having a grand opening at some point, which I will let you know about sometime at the end of the year. But other than that, I don't have any speaking engagements coming up.
Okay.
But again, just to let people know that they're powerful and they can make the changes.
Okay. Thank you, Juliana.
Well,
and this
thank
is
you,
Michael,
Michael
Collins with Journey to Success Radio. I hope you enjoyed this program, and I hope you enjoyed all the information that is shared, and that you put this to good use in your life, and share this rebroadcast with your friends, and let them know that this information is out there. Take your power back and feel good about yourself. I think we've come to the end.
Okay. Is the recording over?
I think so. She said 10 seconds, so.
Okay.
Let me just end it there.